and senior officers had given them medals and watched them go with fixed, faint smiles. Kisses don't last. And now, it wasn't that good things were happening, it was just that bad things had stopped. The old women still grumbled, but they were left to grumble. No one had any directions, no one had a map, no one was quite certain who was in charge. There were arguments and debates on every street corner. It was frightening and exhilarating. Every day was an exploration. Polly had worn a pair of Paul's old pants to clean the floor of the big bar and had got barely a harumph from anyone. Owen, the girls' working school, had burned down, and on the same day, two slim masked figures had robbed a bank. Polly had grinned when she heard that, and hoped that Tonka and Lofty would one day find a way to eat chocolates in a great big room where the world was a different place. Shufti, who'd somehow always be Shufti to Polly, even if the rest of the world now called her Betty again, had moved into the Duchess. Her baby was called Jack. Paul doted on it. And now, someone had been drawing in the gent's privy again. Polly couldn't wash it off, so she contented herself with correcting the anatomy. Then she swooshed the place clean, at least by pub urinal standards, with a couple of buckets, and ticked off the chore, just as she did every morning. When she arrived back in the bar, there were a group of worried men there talking to her father. They looked mildly frightened when she strode in. "What's happening?" she said. Her father nodded to Gummy Abbins, and everyone stepped back a little. What with the spittle and the bad breath, you never wanted a conversation with Gummy to be particularly intimate.
"The Swede Eaters is at it again," he said. "They're gonna invade 'cause the Prince says we belong to him now."
"It's all down to him being the Duchess's distant cousin," said Polly's father.
"But I heard it still wasn't settled," said Polly. "Anyway, there's still a truce."
"Seems like he's settling it," said Gummy.
The rest of the day passed at an accelerated pace. There were groups of people talking urgently in the streets and a crowd around the gates to the town hall. Every so often a clerk would come out and nail another communique on the gates. The crowd would close over it like a hand, open again like a flower. Polly elbowed her way to the front, ignoring the mutterings around her, and scanned the sheets. Same old stuff. They were recruiting again. The same old words. The same old croakings of long-dead soldiers inviting the living to join them. General Frock might be female, but he was also, as Blouse would have said, a bit of an old woman. Either that, or the heaviness of those epaulettes had weighed her down. Kissing don't last. Oh, the Duchess had come alive before them and turned the world upside down for a spell, and maybe they had all decided to be better people, and out of certain oblivion had come a space to breathe. And then, had it really happened? Even Polly sometimes wondered, and she had been there. Was it just a voice in their heads? Some kind of hallucination? Weren't soldiers in desperate straits famous for seeing visions of gods and angels? And somewhere in the course of the long winter, the miracle had faded, and people had said, "Yep, but we've got to be practical." All we were given was a chance, thought Polly. No miracle, no rescue, no magic, just a chance. She walked back to the inn, her mind buzzing. When she got there, a package was waiting. It was quite long and heavy.
"It came all the way from Scritz on the cart," said Shufti excitedly.
She'd been working in the kitchen. It had become, now, her kitchen.
"I wonder what it can be," she said pointedly.
Polly levered the lid off the rough wooden crate and found that it was full of straw with an envelope lying on top of it. She opened it. Inside was an iconograph. It looked expensively done, a stiff family group with curtains and a potted palm in the background to give everything a bit of style. On the left was a middle-aged man looking proud. On the right was a woman of about the same age, looking rather puzzled, but nevertheless pleased because her husband was happy. And here and there, staring at the viewer with variations of smile and squint and expressions that ran from interest to a sudden recollection that they should have gone to the toilet before posing, were children, ranging from tall and gangly to small and smugly sweet. And, sitting on a chair in the middle, the focus of it all, was Sergeant Jackram, shining like the sun. Polly stared and then turned the picture over. On the back was written, in big black letters, "S. M. Jackram's Last Stand," and underneath, "Don't Need These." She smiled and pulled aside the straw.